says that Soma, the moon god, was born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But here we find that Soma was born from the tears in the eyes of Atri. So, who can understand these wonderful things? But these apparent discrepancies, if we look at this with a material mind, we might think, oh, this is a discrepancy. But it isn't, because actually on a spiritual platform, anything is possible. So Krishna can do whatever he wants. He's not like a limiter. It only a certain way has to be followed. And the story of King Pururava, enchanted by Urvasi. It's quite the story. I cheated when I was preparing for the class. I went ahead and I read the rest of the story because the purport is not very long. And I wanted to get it all straight. You know, I remember when I was in school, I was brought up Catholic, and I remember we would read the section in the Bible or the New Testament, that we call it the begat section. You know, who begat who, and who was related to who, and I always found that very confusing. But actually, these are very important because we're so impersonal. We need to remember that everyone is a person. That means they have a mother and father, and they have relationships with other people. And it's in the context of these relationships that we actually become purified in Krishna consciousness, just like in this story. Soma, also born from the mind of the Supreme Lord in another incarnation, now the son of Atri and Anasuya, who is impregnated by the tears of her husband. Pretty amazing. Then Soma kidnapped Tara later on in his life, the wife of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, and he refused to return. So then there was a fight between the demigods and the demons. And then finally Tara admitted to Lord Brahma that Soma was the father of her son. So this child named Buddha was very intelligent, not Buddha with two D's, Buddha with one D, was born, and he was very intelligent. Buddha married Ila, and they had a son, Pururava, who had all wonderful qualities, it says, beauty, magnanimity, good behavior, wealth, power. And with all these beautiful qualities, of course, he was very attractive. So Urvasi, she became attracted to Pururava. And I won't get into the whole rest of the story. I'll leave that for the other verses. But this is one of the many complex stories of the Bhagavatam, pastimes. And like many, many other stories of the Bhagavatam, they highlight the foibles, it's a kind of an old word, but the complexity, the difficulty of being in the material world. Nothing is simple in the material world. There is always something not quite right. And there are always very unusual circumstances. Kunti's sons, they were not born in the normal way because their husband was cursed. So Yudhisthira was born from Yamaraj, Bhima, from Vayu, the wind god, Arjuna from Indra. Draupadi, another very complex story. Actually, a very disgraceful story for the Pandavas. When her sari was taken, when there was an attempt to take off her sari, her husband's, she had all these husbands, not one of them did anything to protect her. This is, how can it be these pure devotees, the Pandavas, didn't even lift a finger to protect the chastity of their wife? Then we have, I'm just remembering some of the stories, Lord Shiva running after Mohini Murti, discharging semen. We have King Sujumni, he becomes a woman, and he switches back and forth. Can understand these amazing situations and stories. We have Durvasa Muni, who offends Maharaja Amrish, and he's running all over the three worlds to try to get away from the chakra that is going to annihilate him. So all these devotees were involved directly, indirectly, due to past karma, due to just the circumstances of material life. So many great devotees have been involved in situations that may not seem to be optimum situations for pure devotional service. Bhishmadev, the great devotee Mahajan, he was fighting on the side of Dronacharya. When I was a new devotee, I had to ask several questions about this. I had heard that Bhishmadev was a great devotee, but then he was fighting against Krishna, and Arjuna was told that he had to kill his teachers, he had to go and battle against Bhishmadev. Actually, Arjuna was the one who finally killed Bhishmadev. Because Lord Krishna told him directly that he had to fight his teachers, his loved ones, his family members. But then, as if this is not complex enough, after the Battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhishmadev was lying on a bed of arrows and he was about to die, the Pandavas, including Lord Krishna, came and took instruction from him. They were fighting against him, and now they're taking instruction from him. This is really quite amazing. So, we're not such exalted devotees, or at least we are. So, what do I learn? What do I learn from these kinds of activities that may sometimes seem very mundane, very material? Like Lord Shiva being bewildered by Mohini Murti. What are we supposed to think about that? Well, I think one very good lesson that we need to learn is that we always have to be very, very careful never to judge a devotee by the external circumstances of their life, even by the mistake, any mistakes they might make. Because we don't know who is really that devotee and what Krishna's plan is to bring that devotee to the point of surrender. That doesn't mean that that we should follow in the footsteps, in the sense of we should do exactly as they do. It doesn't mean that because the Pandavas did not defend the chastity of their wife, that therefore all husbands are exonerated from this duty. It doesn't mean that because Lord Shiva was running all over the three worlds, passing semen, that a devotee should have completely uncontrolled senses. It doesn't mean that. But it means that always we should maintain an attitude of respect, understanding that Krishna is the one who is controlling. And in thinking of all these stories while preparing for this class, I had a realization that one thread that is common in all of these stories, in all of these activities of these great souls, whether they're in a very exalted position or whether they may be in a position of a very desperate position, they never gave up the process of Krishna consciousness. They never gave up surrendering to Krishna. Even if apparently for a period of time they may have given up. But in their hearts they never gave up. The story of Gajendra the elephant, who was cursed to become an elephant. This is a terrible curse because he was not in a position to remember Krishna in an elephant body. But at the end of his life, he remembered. Not at the end of his life, but at the most crucial time of his life, he remembered. And he began to offer prayers. And he offered himself complete surrender to Krishna. So a devotee, this is the mark of a devotee, that no matter what goes on, he always knows, he remembers, he knows what he has to come back to and what is his ecstasy to come back to, that surrendering to Krishna. I remember when I was a new devotee, I thought, oh, this process of Krishna consciousness is so amazing, and I'm just going to do it perfectly, my whole life. I'm just going to do it the way I'm supposed to. And chant my 16 rounds, and I'm going to do everything perfectly. I didn't do that. And a lot of devotees find themselves in a position where they're not as perfect as they should be, or as they thought they were going to be, or as they would like to be. But we always have to remember that Krishna consciousness is a process, and that the most important part of that process is that we can't give up. We can't just stop, because then Maya really, really has us entwined. Actually, I was very fortunate because the years that I was away from Krishna consciousness, away from the association of devotees, somehow or other, I don't know how, but somehow or other, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, I never really stopped chanting. I didn't chant 16 rounds every single day, but I chanted every day. And I think one devotee said to me one time that just chanting, no matter what we're going through in our life, if we remain faithful to chanting, it's kind of like the black box. You know, when a plane crashes, sometimes it crashes into the ocean and they don't know where that plane is, and they've got to find it. And there's a thing called a black box which emits a signal. Even if everything else is destroyed in the plane. So the chanting, or the chanting of our japa, is like that black box. It's the signal that keeps us connected to Krishna. So It's so, so important. And another thing, another realization that struck me was that devotional service is actually beyond all auspiciousness or inauspiciousness. Recently, I've been reading the Bhagavad Gita, and I was reminded. I was reminded as I was getting ready for this class. I was reminded of a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 9.1, Madhu to his guru Vasishtha. Madhu had wanted a sacrifice so he could have a son. And he didn't get a son. So he was upset. He said, "My lord, all of you are expert in chanting the Vedic mantras. How then has the result been opposite to the one desired? This is a matter of lamentation. There should not have been a reversal of the result of the Vedic mantras." So, there should not be reversals. We should just be gradually progressing. But reversals happen. And we are so fortunate because Srila Prabhupada, from the beginning of Krishna consciousness, he has always, always emphasized that our process is not perfect mantras. Our process is not Vedic sacrifices. Our process is not even chanting the mantras with perfect Vedic intonation. This is not our process. Our process is simply to chant the holy names and to take shelter of devotees, take shelter of the spiritual master through their instructions. So, in reading the Uddhava Gita, there is one part of the Uddhava Gita where Uddhava has a lot of questions to ask Krishna on many, many different topics. The verse of the questions is very long. And I'll just read a few of them. Mental equilibrium means absorbing the intelligence in Krishna. Tolerance means patiently enduring unhappiness. Charity means giving up all aggression toward others. Reality means to see Krishna everywhere. Truthfulness means to speak truth in a pleasing way. True wealth is religiousness. Opulence, actual opulence of Krishna, through which the opulence is actually, the only real opulence is the opulence of Krishna, through which he exhibits six unlimited opulences. Misery is to be implicated in searching for sex pleasure. A wise man knows the process of freedom from bondage. A fool is one who identifies with the body and mind. Heaven is the predominance of the motive of goodness. Hell is predominance of ignorance. A rich person is one with good qualities. Poor person, one who is unsatisfied in life. A slave is one who is attached to sense gratification. And a controller is one who is not attached to sense gratification. And then at the end of all these descriptions, Krishna says to Uddhava, "There's no need for more elaborate descriptions. Since constantly seeing good and bad is itself a bad quality. Then he says, the best quality is to transcend good and evil. So, this is our goal. This is what we have to remember as we go through the process of Krishna consciousness. You know, when you go to the airport, recently I was at the airport and I went into one of the stores in the airport. And there was a lady there and she was like buying all this stuff. And she had obviously spent a long time gathering all this stuff. And she had it all on the counter and she's trying to figure out what she wanted to keep and what she wanted to get rid of. And it was all very complicated. And then all of a sudden, her husband, I guess, ran in and said, what are you doing? They've almost finished loading the plane with all the passengers. We're going to miss the plane. I've been looking for you. So she, here's this lady in the airport. The purpose of being in the airport was to get on the plane to go to her destination. But she got completely bewildered and she started, you know, with all this other stuff. So, we can't become bewildered. We have to keep our eye on the goal. And that is to give up all processes of religion and just remember Krishna and never forget him. And, concerning the story of Pururava, I've been reading the 11th canto and I just happened to notice that there's a conclusion to a story. So to end my class, I'll tell you the good conclusion to Pururava's dilemma of being bewildered by Urvashi. So Krishna again is speaking to Uddhava. The following song was sung by the famous emperor Pururava. When deprived of his wife Urvasi, he was at first bewildered, but by controlling his meditation, he began to feel detachment. When she was leaving him, even though he was naked, he ran after her just like a madman. I'm sorry. He ran after her just like a madman and called out in great distress, oh, my wife! Oh, terrible lady! Please stop! It's very funny, actually. Although for many years Pururava had enjoyed sex pleasure in the evening hours, still he was not satisfied by such insignificant enjoyment. His mind was so attracted to Urvasi that he did not notice how the nights were coming and going. Alas, just see the extent now Pururava is again speaking. Alas, just see the extent of my delusion. This goddess was embracing me and held my neck in her grip. My heart was so polluted by lust that I had no idea how my life was passing. Then he goes on to describe how unfortunate his condition was. Where, I'm so sorry. Material value is never pleasant. Although I was a powerful lord, he says, with great opulence, that woman gave me up as if it was no more than an insignificant blade of grass. And still, naked without shame, I followed her. Thank you. I followed her, crying out like a madman. Where are my so-called great influence, power, and sovereignty? Just like an ass being kicked in the face by the Shias, I ran after that woman who had already given me up And then he laments, what is the use of a big education, practice of austerities and renunciation even? And what is the use of studying religious scripture, of living in solitude and silence, if after all that, one's mind, is stolen by a womb? He gets really heavy with himself. To hell with me! I am such a fool that I didn't even know what was good for me, although I arrogantly thought I was highly intelligent. Although I achieved beyond the exalted position of a lord, I allowed myself to be conquered by women as if I were a bullock or a jackass. And then, finally, he says, he takes complete surety of Krishna, who, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lies beyond material perception and is the Lord of self-satisfied sages, can possibly save my consciousness, which has been stolen by a prostitute. So this should be our prayer. This is our position. That we're completely bewildered here in material energy. And just like Srila Prabhupada says in the very first record made in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, he's talking about chanting the holy name, and he says that we should chant helplessly, like a child crying for mother, because we're all hopelessly entangled in a material world. Hare Krishna. I have to warn you, if anyone has any questions, I'm very hard of hearing. So it might be better if you come up close or write it down. Any realizations. I see there are such great souls here in this room. Hopefully. A few words come. Our voice is Srila Prabhupada. Our voice is Srila Prabhupada.